This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Ethiopia. I read from a document from Gregory in these last hours. Ethiopia is now facing an existential crisis. If it fails now, then it could be removed from the map of the world as a great sovereign nation of nations, and its mission to stabilize the great crossroad of world trade would be lost forever. Gregory, Ethiopia is a very complicated story, battling in all directions. There is the tangle with Somalia. There's the tangle with several liberation fronts. There's a long list of them. There's alienation sometimes from Eritrea. There's also the question of Europe and the United States and how they treat the capital, Addis Ababa. And Prime Minister Abe, a receiver of a Nobel Prize, is now more a warlord than he is a peacemaker. How to understand the existential crisis of Ethiopia? What is the major threat, or is it just a combination of threats that undermine the confidence in survival?
Well, it's something that we have to look at in the longer term, bearing in mind that Ethiopia is probably the one of the oldest civilizations with a continual governance pattern in the world, over 3,000 years of continual functioning with the Solomonic line and the like. So right now, we're seeing the culmination of 50 years of chaos, which began when the government of Emperor Haile Selassie was overthrown in 1974. So that basically started off a cycle of 50 years of violence. In the period before that, we saw Ethiopian leaders able to resist foreign interventions, whether they were from Egypt or in 1896 from Italy, and once again in 1935 to 1941, again from Italy. But these were wars of foreign aggression against the country. What we're seeing now, since the coup of 1974, has been internal dislocation and internal massacres where the various communist governments in 74 have attempted to divide and conquer based on ethnic lines to gain control over the entire country. And this is now 50 years. This year will be 50 years of chaos in Ethiopia, where the country has been diminished in its stature, its old prestige gone as the unifier of Africa and the like. And this all began with not just the coup on September the 12th, 1974, which overthrew Haile Selassie, but also beginning with what's called the Massacre of the 60, which occurred on November 23rd, 1974. And that saw 60 imprisoned former government officials executed by the coup leaders, the Derg, at Kirchile prison. And that included two former prime ministers, many members of the imperial household, many of the dignitaries and ministers of the state, and many of former senior military who would not support the coup. And it's been going on since then. And lately, well, in fact, in the last few days, the president of the Crown Council of Ethiopia, Prince Ermias Haile Selassie, issued a statement basically saying, "We, the crown and people of Ethiopia, have endured our portion and more of the massacres of our kinsmen by our kinsmen over the past century, half century, and we can tolerate no more." And he was referring to one of the last gasps, if you like, of credibility, was a massacre at a town called Merowe in the Gojam region on January the 29th, where uniformed troops of the 99th Battalion of the Ethiopian Defense Force, and they were basically of a Oromo ethnicity, came in and just killed literally, I think, 102 people aged between 4 and 96 and took their bodies out and dumped them on the road. But this was just one of many of these such massacres which have been going on for years now, and even under this present government. And largely they're all on ethnic lines, and something which has been fostered by the current Prime Minister, Dr. Abbey, because he's been trying to both suppress his Oromo kinsmen who have formed the Oromo Liberation Army, and also he's tried to suppress Ethiopians of all ethnicities who support the idea of a unified Ethiopia under and with the Ethiopian Orthodox Christian
Church.
That
was the Oromo massacring the Amhara? Who were the victims?
Yes. The victims had been primarily Amhara and Afar people. The Afar are essentially a Somali tribal grouping, but there's a part of the Ethiopian Muslim community, a very peaceful community as a rule. But now the Amhara, the Afar, and many other people, including some of the Oromo Christians, have revolted. They've created five separate militia groups, all of which call themselves Fano, and these are resisting the government. And essentially now they're getting many tens of thousands of government forces defecting over to the Fano, which is now becoming an extremely well-equipped set of militias. And they're now to the point where the government is exercising any real authority in Addis Ababa, the capital, and that capital could fall fairly quickly if the Fano groups get some coordination. And they have been talking about a unified manifesto to state their aims. But basically what they want is this government out, and they've been talking about the restoration or the installation of the 1974 constitution, which was proposed by Emperor Haile Selassie to replace the 55 constitution. That would have reinstated or would have instated a very European and British style parliamentary democracy with a constitutional monarchy. And it's believed that the 74 coup took place, 1974 coup, with support from the Soviets and communists, literally to ensure that that constitution would not be implemented. And now these rebel groups, the Fano, are talking about that as a keystone to the cornerstone of their desire for post-communist Ethiopia.
At the end of 2022, there was a peace deal between the central government and the Tigray Liberation Front. How did we get from there to the attack on the on this Oromo army attacking Amharas? What happened? The center didn't hold?
No, the peace deal, as you call it, and so it has been called, was really the surrender of the Tigray Popular Liberation Front, which is an extreme Marxist group of Tigrayans. And the Tigray province has only about 6% of the Ethiopian population, and the TPLF, this extremist Marxist group, had only a small percentage of that. They had held the reins of government as one of the communist governments since 1974, and they were replaced by a slightly less communistic form of the government, which is now under the control of Dr. Abiy. So so the TPLF were crushed, but at huge costs of lives, a couple of million lives, in fact, in the 2 years of the TPLF revolution, which the TPLF instigated when they lost political office. They then reformed as a militia group against the government. The government, with the help of a lot of other ethnic groups, including the Amhara and so on, helped suppress the TPLF because they were an extremely repressive government when they were in office. But then the government of Dr. Abe, having achieved that peace against the TPLF, then sought to crush all other groups other than the Oromos from exercising any self-determination. So they turned their guns then on the Amhara and the Afar people and on a variety of others, including any adherents of the Ethiopian Tewahedo Orthodox Christian Church, which is made up of people from all over the country. So basically now these Fano militias started in the Amhara region. They're getting support in the Tigrayan region because they also see the threat from the Abiy government. And now you've got these Fano groups in the south of the country and over in the Beni Shangal, people over in the Sudanese border. I mean, they're all over, and they're these five commands of the Fano.
And the Eritreans, are they in this mix? Because there was a time that Abiy talked about linking with Eritrea.
Yes, and Eritrea has constantly, for many decades now, has talked about a reunion with its former partner, Ethiopia, to create this broader Ethiopic federation. But Abiy has fallen out with the President Isaias of Eritrea. He's fallen out with the Djiboutian government, and Djibouti was also once part of the Ethiopian Empire. And now Abiy has fallen out with the Somali leadership. So basically he's got enemies on all sides now, and basically because he's been whimsical in his approach to solving his domestic economic and security problems. And now, of course, the Eritrean are anxious to support these Amhara and other Fano groups against Abiy, but the Fano groups have resisted taking any support from Eritrea at this stage. But the obvious outcome is that if Abiy is overthrown, and that could happen this year or in could happen any day, actually, then you'll probably start to see the reconstruction of the old network of geopolitical alliances between Ethiopia as an overall country and Eritrea and Djibouti, and that would really put Ethiopia back on the map as a Red Sea power. And that's cause of concern for Egypt, and because of that, it's a cause of concern for the United States, because they don't know, where the government of this larger Ethiopic entity would go. The reality is that they would definitely go along the line of, as Emperor Haile Selassie did, of helping to stabilize the Red Sea, building an alliance with Egypt, economic and strategic, and this would be in the interests of the West. So it's going down an interesting path, not getting much attention in Washington, and yet this is the largest war underway in the world today. About 1 million people killed in the last year and a couple of million in the preceding 2 years, 26 or so million people internally displaced. So this is the big league of conflict, and resolving it has to be a priority. And this would do major things for stabilizing the Mediterranean Suez Canal Red Sea sea lanes, the Red Med.
This is the Horn of Africa, and what you're describing is a collapse of governance in all regions: Somalia, Ethiopia, Sudan challenging Ethiopia, Egypt disrupted by the war in Gaza, the Houthis on the other side of the Red Sea firing missiles into shipping. I could go on, Gregory, but we're talking about a collapse of government, not a stabilizing of government. Is that a way to look at it?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's a transformation of the whole region. I think there could be chaos in Ethiopia if the Fano groups don't start coordinating and coming up with a common policy for government after the Abiy government. It could be the restoration of a major democratic.
All right, I'll be positive, but you mentioned Russians before. Where are they? Are they in Addis Ababa? Are they with Fano?
Yes.
Where are the Russians?
The Russians have been supporting the Ethiopian government from a strategic point of view because they have always had a strong interest in not only Ethiopia for the last 200 years, but also in the Horn of Africa. So yes, they are very much there. They've been providing manpower and weapons for the Ethiopian armed forces. They were also providing historically weapons and manpower for the Eritrean armed forces. And so there was always the argument about, are our Russians better than your Russians between the Ethiopians and Eritreans? Now the Russians did support Emperor Menelik in his war against the first Italian invasion in 1896, and they have strong emotional connections with Ethiopia, and that's not tied to Dr. Abiy by any means. Dr. Abiy is you know, just happens to be the one that's there now, and the Russians are supporting Ethiopia as a geopolitical entity.
Do the Europeans have a decision to make on this matter as well, given the original trouble came from Europe, if I recall correctly, in the 1930s?
Well, it came from Italy,
yes.
and it wasn't until 1939-40, when the Italians went into World War II on the side of the Axis, that the British decided then that it was time to help Emperor Haile Selassie, who was in exile in Britain at the time, to retake the country. And as a result, in November 1941, we saw the first great Allied victory of World War II, and that was the retaking of occupied Axis territory. And that was a major event, but it happened just a couple of weeks before the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, so it never got the historical recognition it deserved. And now this is becoming very much a focus of European and other interest. In fact, a joint British and Ethiopian crown memorial was laid at Windsor Castle in November last year by Prince Ermias of the Crown Council and with the authority of King Charles in the chapel in Windsor Castle, commemorating that great cooperative victory which Britain and the Commonwealth had with the Ethiopian patriots and crown against the Italian occupation.
It's time for the King Charles Report. Let's go to that. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.